I'm Dave Williams. You're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu. And joining me this week is Leon Gilbert, someone who provides a range of interesting services to the blind community. And we'll talk about some of those in a little while. But first of all, Leon, welcome to Main Menu. It's good to have you on. You yourself are not blind, as I understand it. And you became involved with a local VI society. Tell us a bit about that and how you got involved, what motivated you, and describe perhaps some of the work that you did.
Yeah, I'm in Middlesex, which is southwest of London in the southeast of England. Basically, I did teacher training. I'd already worked in the computer and communication industry and had decided to go for teacher training with a slant towards special needs education. I started working as a classroom assistant in a class which were learning basic VI technology using HAL. And one of the students that I met was someone that was basically involved in starting up a local VI society and asked whether I could come on board and help out. So I did, and that ended up becoming a unique project, you know, became a registered charity, got an office at the Disability Action Advice Centre in Teddington in Middlesex, and we went on to really develop things there, getting grants, buying computer equipment and CCTVs and all that kind of stuff, and ended up being a great success in the local community with great outreach to blind and visually impaired people that are around.
What sorts of services were you providing through the VI Society, and how did your experience in education play into that?
Well, my experience in education was generally that there were lots of beginners level courses. Firstly, at the beginning, people were just being taught things like office skills, and it didn't tend to go further. There wasn't anything advanced available. And through my branching out into the VI Society, I had a lot more freedom, you know, rather than working for an institution. If it's an independent group, a lot more decision making can go on independently. So basically we moved things into, after we'd got an office and got established a little bit, into desktop publishing was the field I decided to go for. I put in an application for a National Lottery Charities Fund grant, which paid for a computer complete with HAL and Cicero and JAWS and all the necessary stuff we had on it. And we invited local VIPs to come down and learn what they could. And we took it quite a long way, producing a regular monthly 8-page A3 newsletter in colour, doing image scanning and all that kind of stuff. And in fact, those DTP workshops were a great success, and they received a Queen's Golden Jubilee Award in 2002.
Congratulations on the award. In terms of the assistive technology training, assistive technology is fairly complex, to use it with any degree of proficiency. You identified JAWS and HAL and Cicero, which is an OCR package from Dolphin, as being the, you know, the products that you chose, and that desktop publishing you felt would be an area in which local visually impaired and blind people might be interested in working. What brought you to those sorts of decisions?
Basically, it was speaking to individuals more than anything. There was quite a bit of technophobia around anyway, you know, in general in computing, and by the time you've got access technology, there's a lot to think about. And I felt that it was almost the perfect avenue. You know, I was going into something which would have a practically infinite learning curve. There would be no end to how much I could learn exploring into those fields. So working with screen reader users and things like that, and basically finding that people wanted ways to express themselves and to be creative is what sort of led it in the desktop publishing direction, because you can give people boring things to do. If there's no application for it, I mean, something like database, for example, you're not going to use in everyday life. But if you can produce something attractive and express a bit of creativity through it, that is something else. And you tend to create a more enjoyable experience where you give people a bit of creative space. And DTP seemed the perfect subject for that. For example, scanning in photographs, blind users who'd already used scanners for scan and read took perfectly to. And, you know, it just seemed a real good outlet for people's creativity and a way of affording them an opportunity which they couldn't really get from anywhere else to go to that advanced level of doing things with a computer, but also trying to get them enjoying it, if you know what I mean. It was very much a social thing as well as a training thing, and it's important that you get that so that people are motivated to keep coming back.
Well, you could probably teach me a trick or two about formatting documents and producing documents that include photographs and getting the positioning and what have you quite right. Did you find that a bit of a challenge?
Oh, it was a challenge big time. But I'm work part time for an adult college now, and I'm teaching the first ever blind student Photoshop. And I've taught Dreamweaver. I've taught the European Computer Driving License, and that tends to be my specialist area now, is getting blind and visually impaired students who want to go that bit further. You know, doing things like web design and those subject areas where people have basically already got basic skills when they come along, and it is continually challenging. You've got the challenges of the accessibility, the challenges of the communication, you know, getting learning materials into accessible formats, etc., getting to know the person. And I think my favourite way of working is to actually work as a coach one-to-one with people, because I can read things pretty fast, and you know, I'll get to know that person's pace and what their learning ability is like, and develop a good rapport with them. And from then on, I'm a bit like the guide dog with the computer tasks, if you know what I mean. I'll try and lead them and facilitate their learning so it's a good experience, and help them to get ahead, targeting the goals that we're aiming to reach, you know.
Would you describe yourself as an assistive technology trainer? And perhaps we can talk some about certification for AT trainers in the UK. I understand the British Computer Association have a certification scheme now.
That's right, yeah. There is the BTCS training scheme. Unfortunately, I can't afford to do it at the moment, but I hope to at some stage in the future, just for the purposes. And I have been told that I will be able to go straight into stage two of it. It is a big issue. Adult education is far more commonplace to have students of all ages coming along to colleges in the UK than it is in America, from what I understand. And the situation is that there's never really been that much diversity among the various qualifications available, but at the same time there's an increasing number of opportunities. So for example, the Royal London Society for the Blind now offer an accessible version of the European Computer Driving License, which is a basic level course, but it covers 7 modules, so it's a wide-ranging basic level course. And that's a real good step forward, I think. What I've been doing myself has been quite helpful, but you do tend to find that large class situations are not going to work when you're covering things like that. And through my current work for the Accessible Friends Network, a UK group, we're hoping to do some online training soon, which we'll do over voice conferencing like this. And I think that's going to make it... It's going to add a new twang of a new side of accessibility, as it were, to the training that's available. There are limited options for qualifications.
You mentioned that the British Computer Association's certification scheme for assistive technology trainers is out of your price bracket. Do you think that's a wider problem? Do you think that's quite a serious problem, that, you know, people like yourself who clearly have, you know, the experience in education and the qualifications there, the knowledge of adaptive technology, are almost to some extent prohibited from getting that certification, from becoming a bona fide assistive technology trainer, because of the cost of the schemes like the one run by the BCA?
I would say in some circumstances, yes, it is an obstacle. But at the same time, there is a chance I may be able to get my employer to pay for it. So if things are covered by grants, that bridges the gap straight away. It's a shame sometimes that the red tape involved in that process is so tricky to do. But at the same time, when you look at what recognised access technology trainers actually get paid for doing their work, you could say it's a wise investment as well. And that is something else about the training. For the recipients of the training, there's not that many places where you can get good, affordable training, particularly at home, where some people will need it if they're not that mobile. So, you know, the whole market is tends to have quite a high price bracket on it, and I'm sure that that does add greatly to the inaccessibility. I mean, there's the inaccessibility of not being able to do and get to things, but being accessed out by price is another problem. It certainly is, right across the board.
Yeah, it seems to me that you're trying to develop almost a third way, if you will, through the sort of the auspices of adult education. There are two kinds of assistive technology training: very poor training, of which there is a lot of it about, and then a very expensive training, which can often be several hundred pounds a day. And so, has that been your observation?
Yes, it certainly has. At the college I work for, Dave, blind and visually impaired students get concessionary course rates if they're on means tested benefits. So that is one avenue. But inevitably, you know, provision in the mainstream isn't as good as in dedicated places. But you're quite right, there are trainers earning that sort of money. And, I wish I was on that kind of rate, Dave. I would have to work more than about 2 days a week. Even one would do nicely at that sort of rate. I've never earned those sorts of funds. And I'm very aware that there are consultant trainers going around that are certainly making quite large profits from the industry.
Yeah, it's really quite sad, because obviously it's a niche kind of area, so I guess people can to some extent charge what they like. But then on the other, the other side of the coin is that quite often the people for whom it would be most beneficial are quite often not entitled to, to access funds that would cover those exorbitant costs.
No, that's right. I mean, and part of my role when I was working at the VI Society was finding grant sources for people. And I've made several successful grant applications, for organisations. And it's another ball game to find grants for individuals, But that was part of it, is trying to find ways and means for people to bridge the financial gap to get on board. And it's a shame that things are so expensive in the industry that you need to struggle to do that all the time,
Okay. Well, we could sit here and talk about this all night, but I'm sure listeners will be getting a little bit fed up with us bleating on about the cost of assistive technology training. But it is horrendous, and I get the impression that you're fighting the good fight, and good luck with that. So you're involved with adult education, also VI Society, and then in 2000 you became increasingly aware of the global online blind community.
That's right, Dave, yeah. I'd previously worked in a computer communications company. I was a multi-line telex operator, so I'd already done a lot of long-range communication in the days of the early internet, when Telecom Gold and earlier services like that were around. Basically, I took to the internet like a duck to water. I remember getting my 486 online with a dial-up connection, and I was flabbergasted by the amount of resources just having a computer online could have. And of course, with that sort of knowledge in the background, and then I'd come on to working for a VI Society and getting connected over the net, I started to explore online voice chat, such as the system we're using now here on ACB Radio Outplace, where you can talk live to people over the internet, and giving you a global range. I mean, it's wonderful, it really is. I mean, it's sort of beats shortwave radio. You get decent quality audio, and so that really, it was through voice chat communities that I started to explore the wider blind community online.
You've become involved with various community projects online over the last few years, one of which is ACB Radio, and we can perhaps come and talk about that a little bit later. But what other balls are you juggling at the moment, Leon? You seem to be fairly busy, fairly active. I see your name popping up almost everywhere.
Yeah, I think my name has got around a little bit now, Dave, because one of the things is that I've really gone into the whole area of news and online news services, and it's something that is of particular interest. Okay, here's a brief rundown of some of the projects I've got going on. Firstly, when I first started getting into news, and I think this is when I first met you via a mailing list, Dave, was back in September 2002. I was already on several blind VI group mailing lists and fielding quite a few inquiries. You know, you can do a lot of tech support via email, and it does happen. Somebody emails in, my virus program has crashed, what can I do? And you answer with a reply. So I was sort of fielding those tech support replies, and that sort of went a little bit further, and I started to sort of look into online news services, and found that there was some really interesting stuff going on in the media in relation to various blind and visually impaired communities around the world, and the stuff that was happening, and it became of interest to me. And what I basically did is I started up a website on my personal web space with Blue Yonder, which is still my current ISP, and it was, what I wanted to try and do was to provide links, because I was finding it was so difficult to actually get to the news articles that were coming out in the news feed, which were particularly about blind and visually impaired people, technology that they use and all that kind of stuff around the world. It was so difficult to find that stuff. What I decided to do was, just for a test, in September 2002, I'd knocked up this web page, put it on my personal web space, which was links to as many media articles related to vision impairment, and link to them all in one page and make it a useful kind of a link directory page. So anyway, in this first month, I just got rolling, and I managed to find some 200 articles in that first month, and I literally just linked to them all. I put the name of the headline, which gave details of what it was like, the name of the country that it came from, and put it in as a URL into a basic HTML web page, and uploaded it onto the internet. And then invited some of my blind friends to come along and have a look and see if they found it useful. And the response I got back to that was quite phenomenal.
That was your VIP online website, I think. That must take a huge amount of time to dig out all those news stories and to put those links up on the web. And that site is still going, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's on the internet now. After a few months of usage, I decided I was going to get a bit more serious with it, and I bought a domain name for it, which is www.vipnews.org.uk, and it's still there. And in fact, it is the largest archive of links to blindness and vision impairment media on the whole internet. The listings on Google have gone absolutely phenomenal on it. Basically, if I go back to September 2002 and come forward all the way through 2003, I continued to do the same thing every month. I started to develop my research techniques using Boolean searches, signing up to online newspapers and stuff like that, and decided I would make a kind of a hobby of it. You know, not getting paid anything for it, but there was the reward in the learning and the reading and the web page work that was involved in keeping it all going. And at one stage, just about in the middle of 2003, I think the maximum number of article links I posted in any one month at one time went over 800. So it had gone up by a scale of 4 from that first month from where I started. And you say it takes a lot of time. As I was going along, I was working out a system by which I could cut down that amount of time. Yes, it can take a lot of time to do, but obviously you refine your techniques when you're doing the same task again and again. And so I kept going on it, and basically I built it up, and it's now an archive which is searchable using Google, with over 10,000 links to over 10,000 articles going right back to September 2002, which is searchable. And if the other thing that's very interesting with it is that when I was posting articles on it, Dave, I was coming forwards day by day, and what I was trying to do is keep up a day at a time. So all of the articles related to vision impairment that were posted in one particular day, I would send all those links up and put it on that date, and then the following day. So it became a kind of a link journal format going forwards. But what I also realised was that for a screen reader user, if you're going down these lists of links, sometimes it helps if you've got a little bit of context on them, you know, to know where an article is coming from. So basically what I did was, on the end of each link that I was posting, by about the third month of running it, I decided to group them into three sort of sets of posting to help with the regions on where they came from. So I had UK and Europe, USA, and then rest of world for each day. And what I would do is, not only would I be gathering all those links together into one HTML file, I'd then sort them out into the ones that were British and Europe, the ones that were all from America, and the ones that were all from the rest of the world, which included a diverse range of countries, I might add. So that is basically the format of the journals going back, if you go back into those link archive journals now. And as I say, I built it up as quite a substantial resource, and it was done all on a voluntary basis. I have put a lot of time in. I wouldn't like to guess how many hours total were put into that site's archive, Dave, to be honest with you.
Do you discriminate at all about the sorts of stories that you carry, or is it just anything that's likely to be of interest or that concerns blind and vision impaired people?
The only general rule I would say on things that I would keep out would be if I found something too condescending towards people, or if it contained violence in any form, because what I really didn't want to report on was crimes and things like that. So I was tending to try to keep it family friendly without censoring it too much, if you know what I mean. And there have been some very traumatic things. You've got to think that if something makes the news, there's got to be a reason why. Some of the things I've read, Dave, you wouldn't believe what basically happens is that a mainstream journalist will sensationalise more or less an everyday event because it's a blind person that's doing it. And, you know, you'll get sort of blind woman leads everyday life and read this article. She goes to the shop, is treated like a miracle, you know, and it's ridiculous sort of exaggeration. So what it's really shown me is that there is a lot of misconception from the public about blind people. And looking through and between the lines of some of these articles, it's also very multi-dimensional. You know, there's a lot of different facets and a lot of different sides. People are individuals, and I think that to pick vision impairment as a common theme across the news actually gave it a very interesting twist. It's sort of got its own variety of ups and downs, which I've found to be very, very interesting. I think it's given me a better angle. At the time I was doing that reading for VIP News, where I was posting links every day, as I say, for about 18 months solid, it was far more interesting to me than the world news that was going on. For example, what was happening in politics, what was happening in various, you know, mainstream news.
The editorial decisions that you've made, some may view those as a little bit controversial. A violent crime, for example, against a blind person, you indicated that you might be more inclined to take a sort of fairly family-friendly mainstream approach. But surely, if that happened, it's newsworthy. Would you really not include it? And if not, I mean, you are doing this as a volunteer, so absolutely you can pick and choose, and you have every right to do that. But from an editorial perspective, should we be shielding people?
You're quite right. This is a bone of contention, Dave. I mean, when I say keeping it family friendly, I would add to that some of the things that I've read as part of that reading service were horrific. You know, and I think you have to have limits on things that you send, because there's no doubt about certain things being disturbing. You know, in the case of sexual crimes, for example, and things like that. That's what I generally meant. I mean, I wasn't taking a censorship approach, and I think you could safely say when someone is posting as many articles as that per month, I would say, you know, I was probably skipping a dozen where I was posting 800 or something like that, because I considered them to be too disturbing. But I mean, if someone wants to go looking for that information, that is something else, you know. But I wasn't trying to mollycoddle people. I do believe that you're quite right. And in actual fact, as of the 2005 postings on VIPnews.uk, which has now changed in format to being just mainstream, well, not mainstream, it's all UK news, but sorted into categories. I have actually got a crime category in it, because I'm making a point of listing crime as a category. There's lots of things like door crime happening, where, you know, for example, I've read about blind pensioners being conned at the door, burglaries, being victims of crime, street muggings and things like that. There's actually a lot of that going on. So I've actually got a separate category for crime in the categorised news now, and right by the category I say, if you know about a crime against a blind person, call Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. You know, and I am now taking a different approach to it, although I'm working just on the UK side of it, where I am actually including stories that feature crime to try and bring it to people's attention a little bit, because I don't think people are that aware of how much of that goes on, and there have been a lot of circumstances under which blind people have been victimised, and I certainly wouldn't want to hide that from the public, you know, no way.
Right, and you certainly carried the story in Scotland about the guy who allegedly bit his guide dog, which a lot of people will have found quite disturbing.
For those that don't know about this, the man is innocent. He was proven completely innocent. That didn't get any press coverage at all in response. I know it for a fact. The sheriff from the Scottish County Court looked into the case there, and the answer was that the animal was inspected by the vets. All of the evidence in that initial over-sensationalised story were given by a witness on the street who, they say, exaggerated the story. There was no injury to the pet, and the guy has now got that guide dog back as a working service animal, so he was innocent there. And this is one example of the mainstream press blowing things out of proportion and then not following it up to cover responsibly their track. The person was not found guilty of abusing his guide dog.
Just let people know, you've got you have a, is it a minor bird or something you have there? So people don't think you're in the zoo. And as far as the story goes, yes, I was very careful to say allegedly, and the story it some may have found disturbing, but. As you say, the guy was cleared, and of course the media don't generally cover that bit. You are doing this on a voluntary basis, and you've alluded to the vast number of hours that you put in. Why have you taken a sort of a non-profit approach? Why haven't you registered a .com and signed up for Google's AdSense and tried to make a couple of quid out of this?
Well, I have made a couple of quid. That's about all I've made. I'm basically a bit of a knowledge junkie, Dave. I love to learn, and I do it for the learning. And there's been lots of non-financial reward through doing it.
Okay, so it's not just VIP news now, which is fairly UK-centric. You got a couple of other outlets. Let's talk about some of those.
Yeah, okay, I will do. But before moving on to other things, I'll just say that on VIPnews.org.uk, the issue of having a disclaimer is very important. And so I've always made sure that I keep a disclaimer on the site, because it's literally just linking to outside websites. So basically, and this kind of answers the question about whether I've been profit orientated or not as well. As I say, as far as I'm concerned, learning and knowledge is profit. It's just not financial profit, but it's still valuable profit. And when you think I've read all these articles, and I will never ever regret having done that. I could also tell you about situations where I've actually done outreach and I've got in touch with the people in person about the story and acted upon it. And things like that, and I would never have had those situations arisen in my life if it wasn't for having run the news service. So I don't regret any one of those hours now that I've put all of those into this. But what I say is, the editor is not liable for the contents of any external internet sites or pages linked to at vipnews.org.uk, nor does he necessarily endorse any commercial product, political, religious viewpoint, service or attitude mentioned or language used. No responsibility taken for errors or omissions, non-profit making, intended to be assistive, and for accessibility, awareness, education and leisure purposes, produced and edited on a voluntary basis. And I make a point of making that disclaimer all the time, Dave. It is there for the general good, and people have fed back to me to say it has been helpful. They found information which they couldn't have got through any other source, thanks to the services that I've done.
Many online news sites now are starting to move towards a registration model where they're requiring people to subscribe, often for free, I should say that, but subscribe nonetheless. Do you include stories from publications that require a subscription, and what's been your thinking on that?
The answer to that is, in most cases, no. because the information isn't public domain if it's not available, and certainly from the point of view of linking to something, it's no good for somebody if they follow a link and then find they've got to subscribe. So, you know, I'll try to keep and maintain links that work only and will get people directly to the content as part of trying to provide a more efficient news service, which is not just confined to vipnews.org.uk, as you know.
Okay. Your news links now are disseminated through a number of outlets. Let's identify some of those.
Yeah, okay. Well, the next one is, we'll come to ACB Radio Last Save, right? The next source, I would say, and this really is my first point of reading now. This is where I'll read and post articles, first of all, is actually through mailing lists. Because one thing that is the case is that for a lot of people, the internet is not very accessible, and email by comparison is considerably more accessible. It's something easier. There are people around with readers and freedom boxes and various other technology, and you know, there's lots of braille displays out there that will read email messages perfectly well, etc. So email is a very accessible medium, and basically there's a mailing list which is called the Blind News mailing list. It's run by a guy called Jeff Stevens, who's over in Texas in the USA, and I'd started submitting a few articles into the list via email, and he then asked whether I'd like to become a moderator on the list, as I was sort of queuing things up a bit there, shall we say. At the moment, that is somewhere I've been posting a lot of articles recently, and I've given their online database a huge boost by bringing online about, I would say, an average of over 400 articles a month for about the last 4 months solid, and those go out via the mailing list to there's somewhere around about 500 subscribers, which includes radio reading services for the blind around the world, people in Australia and New Zealand. I've had feedback, Israel as well, in different countries. So mailing list distribution seems to be one of the efficient ways to go. So I'm a moderator and a daily poster to the Blind News mailing list, which anyone can reach at blindnews@blindprogramming.com.
So there's the VIP News, the VIP News website, which is fairly sort of UK-centric. Then there's the Blind News mailing list at Blind Programming. And then, of course, there's ACB Radio. Have we missed anything?
Well, yeah, you haven't even mentioned the Accessible Friends Network yet, which I'm a co-founder and the webmaster of, which is a national UK charity, very young, only started just over 1 year ago. I think you've interviewed Chris Cant on here about that. Well, it's myself, himself, and Steve Pallett, three co-founders of the Accessible Friends Network, which is a new consumer-led UK group, now a national charity, we're offering a whole lot of activities on the internet as well, so which includes live voice conferencing over Ventrilo, and we've got a pretty extensive website over there as well, which is about to feature on BBC In Touch, funnily enough.
So let's talk about the services that you provide to ACB Radio, and what you've done for us is quite remarkable. Once upon a time, we subscribed to a service called Moreover, and Moreover had an automated system for producing computer news headlines by genre, and one of those genres was stories making news in the blind community. Unfortunately, we received a lot of feedback from people that quite often those stories were highly irrelevant. I think you might have rattled my cage about this once or twice, in fact, Leon. That many of those stories were highly irrelevant. You know, you would get stories that would include the phrase, you know, blind drunk or you know, blind stupidity by such and such a politician or whatever. They would make their way into the story because the software wasn't sophisticated enough to be able to determine the context of words, of the, you know, of the keywords that it was picking up on. The reason your service is so exciting and the reason why it's so reliable is because they're all picked by hand. You do have strategies and you do have mechanisms for selecting or searching out your stories, but you do check every link and you do you do pick the link by hand, so you know that the story is going to be relevant. And what you've done for us, well, describe what you've done. What do people find when they go to the ACB Radio homepage now?
Right, well, basically what I've done is working together with Jeff, the ACB Radio webmaster. He set up a console where I could submit stories via a web-based console as my in my role as part of the ACB Radio web team to different RSS news feeds. And what it basically means, without explaining the RSS any further at this stage, if you go to the bottom of the homepage of ACB Radio at www.acbradio.org, you'll find some links to news articles there in four different categories, basically. I've distilled out from the overall news reading that I do, and I'll pick out stories on four different topics and forward all those in via the web-based console which Jeff has set up for me, so that you've got a regular four regular feeds of news articles there. And the categories are basically assistive technology, guide dog news, blind sports, and blind arts that we've got running at the moment. So on those four feed subjects, there are continually updated links to news articles on those subjects available at the footer of the ACB Radio homepage.
Right, absolutely. And people just love it. We've got such positive feedback about the feeds. And you mentioned RSS. Now, this is an exciting technology, really simple syndication, or I've heard it's done for one or two other things, some of them not repeatable on air. But RSS essentially is a technology where you can take dynamic content from a website and include it in your own website, or you can read it using what they call a news reader, an RSS reader, which will allow you to keep an eye on that content as it changes on a, you know, on a daily or hourly basis, whatever that may be. So people can do that, right, with these feeds.
That's absolutely right. There's a range of different RSS readers and what's called an aggregator system. In addition to there being a separate application you can run, which is an RSS reader program, you can go to aggregator sites, and there's various ones around that allow you to select which feeds, when you then go back and log in with your personal profile, which feeds you're subscribed to. And yes, RSS has taken on in a really big way at the moment around the net. One thing about it is, and not a lot of people are aware of this, it's faster than email. It's like voice chat or MSN Messenger on an instant messenger program, in that 1 second after I post a new article onto one of the feeds, for example, if I found a new guide dog story in my next reading session today and post it onto the guide dogs feed, all of the subscribers, no matter how many of them there are, will instantly have that headline appear at the top of their RSS feeds within 1 second of my posting it. So it's actually faster than email, and it's a pretty efficient service. Once people have got either their RSS reader program or aggregator plugged into a stream, I mean a feed, then it's practically instantaneous. And with programs such as Accessible RSS 1.5, which is a free RSS reader program anyone can get from webby.org.uk, that's webby.org.uk, you can literally copy the URL to the RSS feed into your reader, and you don't need to run a web browser to be able to access those feeds. They come up in a simple list of links with the most recent ones first, and it's just a matter of using cursor keys and enter key to select the link, press enter on the link, and the article opens. It takes you straight to it, and it opens up in your browser. So it's a very efficient service, and it's in a way a bit like an accessible ticker tape system, and I think it's going to catch on quite well in the blind community, Dave.
Yeah, I think so. There are plugins available for Outlook, of course, that will let you receive RSS content. I hear on the grapevine that Internet Explorer 7 is quite likely to have some RSS support. So certainly the support for RSS is increasing. And I'm aware of some early adopters, but it seems to me now it's really starting to come of age. So people wanting to get the addresses to the ACB Radio RSS feeds, what do they need to do?
Go to the ACB Radio homepage, browse down until they hear a heading which says says something or other news. So there's assistive technology news. They can press their application key on that link, choose copy shortcut, and then it will be basically, because we have got four feeds output into one page, but if they copy the URL from the heading for any of those feeds and then paste it into their RSS reader, from then on they'll be subscribed to those feeds. And they're all very interesting, Dave. You know, blind sports is interesting. Things are happening internationally by blind sports people around the world. The guidebook stories are also very internationally diverse. I think there was a story from Croatia yesterday, something from Australia the day before that. Obviously, you get a lot of US and UK articles, but there are an increasing number of articles being published from other countries. And also, the blind arts is very interesting, sort of covering various arts things, from musicians to visual arts, sculpture, accessible exhibitions and things like that. So they're all valuable feeds, and all you've got to do is copy the URL from the feed header from the homepage, paste it into your RSS reader, and you'll be away.
This really is allowing ACB Radio to offer a first-class new service to our visitors and listeners, and people can keep track of that, you know, in real time using RSS or just by visiting the web page, and you just navigate by heading to get to those feeds, and we may put a link at the top of the page so people can jump straight to them. So we would certainly welcome feedback on any of that. And I think you said to me the other day that our guide dog newsfeed is the only one of its kind anywhere in the world.
You're absolutely right. Yes, it is one of a kind. I've searched through all the RSS search engines. I've had a good look around on the web, and basically RSS is practically virginal in the blind community at the moment. There are very, very few news feeds specifically relating to blindness and vision impairment that are available, so it's pretty unique resources. I used to do stuff. I made a separate page for Guide Dog Stories when I ran vipnews.org.uk, which I called the World Wide Woof, and I basically gathered as many links to guide dog related stories as I could and put them in one place, and I got a lot of good feedback from that, and it's one of the reasons why I really wanted to get an RSS feed on the subject of guide dogs going. And as I said to you quite rightly, it seems to me to be a unique resource. Not found anything else to match it. Saying that, they're all pretty good feeds, Dave. I'd challenge anyone, if you can find another feed out there to match those which are blindness related on any of the subjects, assistive technology, guide dogs, blind sports or blind arts, I'd like to know about them.
And so would we. I'm still chuckling at Worldwide Whoop, I'm afraid. You do a first class job, Leon, and we really, really appreciate it, and I'm sure the visitors to the ACB Radio site really appreciate it, and if the you know, if the 40 stories or so that we carry on the ACB Radio site aren't enough for you, then absolutely check out Leon's site. We're running out of time, Leon, so do you want to just give us some contact information, and perhaps if there's anything I haven't mentioned that you'd like to tell us about?
I've got now around about a 15,000 article readership behind me of vision impairment related news articles, which I started on a voluntary basis, and to see it expand and come on as it is, and just to know it's useful to people around somewhere, if you're searching the web, I've basically increased people's chances of being able to find blindness related news articles around the world, helping people to keep in touch and up to date with the newest technology, and to be in a position doing that, it certainly is pay in itself, and I sincerely hope that it is of benefit to people. I am going to continue doing it on a voluntary basis for the foreseeable future, and the learning curve that it's represented to me as an individual person is just beyond words. I can't express how it has affected me, Dave, but it certainly has been wonderful, and I hope long may it continue.
Let's give some contact details then, Leon, for people wanting to get in touch with you and your various projects. Okay, take it from the top. You've got the, let me see, the VIP News website, which is vipnews.org.uk. There is the mailing list, the Blind News mailing list, which is at blindprogramming.com. And then there is the Accessible Friends Network, the URL I don't have off the top of my head. And then, of course, any email address or anything like that that you would like to give out.
Yeah, sure. The Accessible Friends Network, can be found at tafn.org.uk, and my own email address, if anyone wants to contact me directly, is lwg@blueyonder.co.uk.
All the best then, Leon. Thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. Is there anything that I hadn't asked you about that that you'd like to mention?
There probably is, Dave, but, you know, I'm a bit confounded by all this at the moment. But thanks for a great interview anyway, OK? And I'll catch you again sometime soon.
Oh, you will do. And just for people, because people are bound to ask me, tell us about the whistling we can hear in the background.
Firstly, I live by a railway, if you notice the train's going past. Secondly, I've got the most famous minor bird on the internet, whose name is Jeffer, and he's there in the background. That was him.
Jeffer.
Yep. He's met parrots on voice chat. We've actually got a bird of him going on over at Taffin, where different talking bird owners get together and their birds chat to each other over voice conferencing. So that's a new twist.
The world has gone mad. Leon Gilbert, news gatherer extraordinaire and keeper of minor birds.
Cheers, Dave. Bye for now.